Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, Jay. You're supposed to be running this music now.
Right on cue.
Yeah, no kidding. I miss our professional disc jockey.
Yes.
Well, another minute I start the introduction, it'll kick in. Oh, no, it didn't. It didn't do it at all. Okay, well, welcome to Feet Steak Pandemonium for Thursday, July 18th, 2019. This is Michael Norris along with Bobby Simmons and Jerry Oates. It's been a while since we've been on the air. I appreciate everybody's patience with us, but anyway, I'm not going to fool this thing. Now it won't even let me turn it off. But anyway, how you guys doing this evening?
I'm doing good.
Me too. Feel great.
What do I tell you?
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you.
And the record's skipping. Without even having a record, it's skipping.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network, where we take you down memory lane for a look at the...
Unbelievable.
We spare no expense for the finest and technical equipment.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents... Peach State Pandemonium.
Rich State had the hiccups the day he recorded that one.
That thing's got timing like some of the guys I got in the ring with. I'm telling you.
Oh, man. Well, anyway, again, welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. First of July 18th, 2019. Oh, man. Oh, man alive.
That thing's not going to come back on, is it?
God, no. Stop. And how opening up the business to everyone. I changed the business forever. So
before we dig into that, you guys got anything you want to bring up, talk about, discuss?
I can't think of anything.
Well, just remember Harley Race. He's in the hospital, and he had to be hospitalized several hundred miles away from home. So it's kind of a hardship on him because his family's with him or his wife's with him. And I know on his website or on his, they're selling t-shirts, and I'm not a t-shirt salesman, but I'm just, they said all the money that from the t-shirts they're selling is going to kind of help defer some of the expense of, being hospitalized away from home. And, you know, there it is. If you're interested, go to his website and take a look at it and read the post.
Where was he going?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm sure it was an appearance somewhere. I think that's the only time he travels anymore is, for a fan festival or something of that nature.
Right.
And they just said he had a little medical emergency away from home and had to be hospitalized. So.
That's a shame.
I'm surprised with the health issues he's had here recently that he's even doing those appearances.
You know, I don't know unless it's just an absolute necessity for him to make those, from a financial or whatever kind of, he told me one time, last time I saw Harley, he didn't even know who I was. And that's understandable. It's been a lot of years since we worked together, but he was the first booker that I worked for when I came to work for Barnett. And then after that, when he became the champion, I've told the story, I probably signed his name more than he did. And, you know, he'd call me, you know, once, twice a month to send, you know, 10 pictures to some deputy sheriff where he had gotten a little skirmish and needed, you know, to smooth the waters. So, but, yeah, he's, I just, you know, he was confined to riding a scooter, you know, when I saw him last, and he just, I don't know. I just, I hate it.
But, that's hard to believe.
Guess we're all heading that way at some point or another. I never thought I'd be walking around with a cane, but here I am.
It's just,
it's a good gimmick for you.
Yeah.
You're like Dandy Jack.
Yes, sir. It's been a pleasure. Yours. God. Oh. Well, I remember, listen, remember when he came and worked for Ann in 85? We got him and he came and did a couple shots. I was like a kid in a store doing those interviews with him because I can remember how bad as a kid I hated him.
And he could flat talk now.
Oh, yes, sir, he could. And we did those interviews and I loved it. I told him, I said, man, I said, you don't know how much fun this is for me. I'm doing those things.
Where was he living at that time in 85?
He was living in Lilburn or Lithonia. Lilburn, I believe it was. He had been working here for a construction company for years. And nobody knew where he was because when he dropped out of sight, he just dropped out. And then I don't know how that deal came to be when he came and worked for us those shots, but, you know, we were grasping at straws and none of us knew it at the time, but I'll go to my grave thinking she was just trying to get somebody to sue her to get her to stop again, but it was what it was.
Yep. That was,
changed so much in 85. I don't know who she thought would even be bothered by her running.
Well, I don't know either. But she had some, you know, I loved her to death, but she had some strange ideas.
Well, if anybody ever got a raw deal, it was her.
Yeah, I agree. Oh,
absolutely.
I agree.
She did.
But
you know, his death and Eddie Graham's death changed the business forever.
Yes, it did.
That's what I believe.
It did. They were the backbone of what was going on at the time.
They nobody fooled with them.
No, they didn't.
Nobody. And that was kind of the beginning of the end for what we knew.
Yes.
Of course, it did last a little while longer, but it was, we were right there in the middle of it.
Ooh. Well, like we've talked about, it was a godsend for me. It paved the way for me to get in the business.
Right.
But you know, it destroyed, you know, the fans here were the winners in that situation. Because for about a year and a half, not the full 2 years, but for a year and a half, they were getting the best of both worlds, man. They were seeing the people they knew on Tuesdays and Ann's show, and then they were getting all this stuff, all these people they had read about in the magazine on Friday nights. So.
And it took a while to turn that other one around. I mean, because
yes, it did.
Nobody, you know, there was nothing. It was just nothing.
Well, you know, I think that proves a theory that we've talked about on this show. You know, back in the day, the things that drew money were when there were personal issues between
right.
people. And when the split came and all the talent, or all of it but a couple of you guys, went with Ann, all the personal issues went too that they'd been watching on TV.
They had to overcome that.
Cold yes, turkey. Sir. Yep. And then when the, you know, you're right, it took a while, but once they developed, once Watts came in here and stayed and he developed some things with Tim Woods and they brought two in and he got into some some different personal issues. And one of the things in that 2-year stretch that I think might have been the thing that turned the tide was when they switched John Hill and they did the program with him and Tim.
Right.
You know, because that was very personal. And that's – they – yeah, it was – the fans were the winners there.
But, it was a hoot.
Yeah. God, that seems like – well, I guess it was so long ago.
Yes, guys. I don't know that you would know. I know the other promoters, especially Eddie Graham, of course, he had points. I'm just wondering how the
hey, Michael,
acted.
I don't know if you can hear us or not, but you're breaking up real bad.
I'm sorry. I was just wondering how the other promoters felt at sending their was. I know putting it out of the gate. Sending other, you know, guys to fill in, you know, to how they felt about it. Oh, did anybody ever even talk about that?
You broke up pretty bad, but I know what you're asking. No, I mean, I think they all supported that. I mean, that's what I've gathered. I mean, Eddie would come up here and, you know, of course, they wasn't going to disrupt what they were doing either.
Right.
By any stretch. So, I mean, they, you know, they would send, I know Matt Suda came up here and they, you know, he probably wasn't being pushed at that time. And they just gradually did it. But no, I think they all, I never heard anything like that. Did you, Bobby?
No. It was the NWA. They closed ranks, you know. I dare somebody down there try to steal our business, and that's the way they looked at it. And yeah, they didn't mind sending folks in here, and you
I
know some of those guys would come in on Fridays and be gone. But
right,
yeah, it was
I think that they looked at it like this: if that could happen here in Georgia, it could happen to us.
Sure,
you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's one reason I know, of course. Well, of course, Bobby was there. They would bring in, announce some talent, and I'm sure they wouldn't have announced it if it wasn't coming, and they got to them and stopped different guys from coming.
The two biggest ones I remember, you know, of course, we plugged Mascaras, and he showed up. And
he didn't care. Mascaras didn't care.
No, and of course, when he got here and the people saw him, they oohed and aahed when he took the jacket off. But then they seen him as in-ring stuff, and it wasn't what we were used to here.
No.
You know? And then we promoted, they announced that Eduardo Capantier was coming here. And we booked him, he was booked in the main event on Tuesday in Atlanta, and he no-showed. So somebody got to him. And the other one, the one that really got me, they promoted Bruno Sammartino coming here. Again, put him in the main event on a Tuesday night in Atlanta, and he no-showed. So,
And I look back at 85, I mean, why would he have cared?
Yeah.
Unless somebody paid him not to come, you know.
Right.
And that,
yeah. Somebody
and I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was.
Yeah, once that
hurt our business, plus we got to, you know, and it's what I've said, you know, we got to the point where we couldn't get talent. And when you can't rotate your talent, you know, you're fine. You're beating a dead horse.
Did you know anybody that got hurt by that? I don't really.
No,
by
not really.
Working for Gunkel.
No. It's like,
I know there was threats.
Yeah, we're going to blackball you. We're going to do this. When we shut down on Friday night, when we were told that was it, they called a meeting for 9 o'clock on Saturday morning. And the meeting was, and they told everybody, look, Barnett's going to be there. And if you want to go somewhere and you don't have any contacts anymore, or, and this was basically for the guys, I think, that had been here a while. And, you know, the top guys, Rock Hunter and Joe Hamilton, and none of those guys showed up for that. You know, they didn't need that. And but, you know, some of the underneath guys showed up. And Barnett, I know he sent some to Kansas City and he sent some to Texas. And, or he got them booked. And, you know, if you could make a promoter money, they didn't care.
Of course they didn't care.
No.
They didn't care.
You know, years ago I've heard, I hate to even mention this name, but Charlie Smith has told me, one of the funny things that always happened every week was on Monday or Tuesday at the wrestling office, they would get a blacklist letter from Nick Gulas. You know, we're going to blacklist this guy, and we're going to blackball this guy, don't use this guy. And, you know, Smitty said, "Gunk, you throw it in the garbage can. You know, if the guy can make me money, I'm going to use him." So, yeah, that was a – I don't think anybody was hurt from that whole deal as far as work.
Well, think about it. Two years after All South went down, or not even 2 years, about a year and a half, you know, the IWA started up, Ox Baker, Ernie Ladd, Bob Ellis, all who had worked for Ann, went right over there to them. And that didn't hurt them either.
No, of course it didn't. That was all a bunch of, you know, junk. Yeah, if somebody grow you money, they don't care.
Oh, yeah.
And why should they care?
Exactly.
And I don't begrudge the guys for doing it.
No, because all you
can do
is take
what
care
they
of your family and earn it.
You know, they're making a living, you know. But, yeah, I never – yeah, and Ernie worked for everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And was a draw for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. He could do a lot of stuff for a big
Bob
man.
Bob Ellis did, too, you know.
Yeah, Ellis, he was – I never met the man, but I remember seeing him in magazines forever.
Yep. Well, he's the first guy I ever saw touching up the ball spot on his head. But he did it with black shoe polish. That improved later on with the sprays and whatever, but that black shoe polish would come off the first time you headlocked him.
Is he still living?
Yeah.
I think he is. I'm not sure. I hadn't heard about him dying.
I had not heard of anything of him passing away. I know he had – somebody was peddling a book about him, or supposedly a book about him a couple of years ago, but I don't think it ever saw the light of day.
Well, God, I mean, there's nobody who would know who he is anyhow.
No, not anymore. But he was a star in his day, though.
Oh, don't think he was.
Oh, absolutely.
It's funny how things, you know, go away like that.
He and Bruiser probably had the hottest feud in the late 50s, early 60s, and they carried all across, worked everywhere with it.
Huh. Yeah, that was smart business there, wasn't it?
And Ellis was back in the days before steroids, he was probably had the best natural build of a guy as far as, you know, look good and everything.
Was he tall, Bobby?
Yes, he was. He was tall.
I was going to say he was about 6'4", 6'5", and probably a good 255, 260. But
he was an impressive looking guy. Very impressive. Where was he? I know those trunks you used to say, right?
Oh, yeah, a little like cow skin. I don't know
where he had those things made then.
I remember first time I met him, I refereed his match. He came into Atlanta for Ann, and I think he might have been working with Ox. I can't remember, but, yeah, it was a – and he was a good looking fellow, man. Ladies loved him.
Very handsome.
Yeah.
Even with all those blade scars on him, because he loved to bleed.
Yeah, he did. They said that I remember Kelly talking about he booked him in there to be his partner, you know, the Cowboys, and he showed up bald headed, wanted to be a heel.
Yeah, I was going to say the one and only appearance he ever made in Mobile. He came in 76, and Kelly knew him from working when Kelly had left Mobile and was working for Bruiser. Of course, you know, Ellis was Bruiser, one of Bruiser's top stars up until the end. But he'd gotten to know him and was brought him into Mobile, was going to work an angle with him where, you know, he brought him in as his, you know, hero and mentor and all that stuff. And then Ellis shows up with his head shaved and, you know, he worked one match. He worked against Ken Lucas one night in Mobile and worked heel, and that was it.
What Ken Lucas Kelly and said. Ellis.
Yep.
Good
yep.
grief.
Can you imagine that?
No, I cannot.
A 5'7" Ken Lucas working babyface against a 6'5" heel Bob Ellis.
I can't.
Of course, the fans in Mobile, except for ones that may have read about him and had no clue as to who he was. And the whole thing got over like a popcorn fart, and Kelly said blew his whole program, and he told Stud Ellis he didn't need him anymore after that.
I can imagine that because I refereed.
I know what you're going to say.
Don Serrano and Ernie Ladd.
No,
I thought you
were
going to say
Ernie Ladd and Super Soul Davis.
Well,
that's Don Serrano.
Don Serrano and Ernie.
Yeah, he became Super Soul Davis. Or that was the name he was using, yeah. Oh.
And even with the built-up shoes, he was still only about 4'3".
Yeah, he was a tiny fella.
Yeah. But there again, see, that was near the end
of
the run.
He was a heck of a
worker,
though. He was a heck of a worker. Threw a beautiful drop kick.
Yeah, he was. All that was just, I don't know. But the reason it lasted as good as it did was on account of Tom.
Yeah, it was. Tom could manipulate. That was the word Tom used. He never said he was a booker. He said he manipulated the matches is what he would say. But, he had a mind like a steel trap when it come to
he did that
figuring
he
things out.
Where was the first place he did booking?
Oh God, I don't know. I don't know where the first place was.
I don't either.
I know he booked for LaBelle in California, and he booked for Gulas, and he booked for the Sheik.
When did he start booking Atlanta?
Wait a minute.
They came back in here in
the late 60s.
Late 60s or right around 68, 69, 70, somewhere in
somewhere
there.
Somewhere in there. That's
okay.
When he was the booker.
Okay. His first booking was probably when they were out with McGurk in Oklahoma in 65, 66, something like that.
You see, I never
first
knew
big
that.
Program Jack Briscoe ever. Yeah, first big program Jack Briscoe was ever in. He and Haystack Calhoun worked a program with Tom and Jody. That had
well,
to be 65 or 66.
I'll tell you something, as a fan that lived here my whole life, I can remember going to the auditorium. We always sit in the general admission, and they only sold those tickets on Friday nights. They didn't sell them early. And box office opened at 6:30, and the matches started at 8:30. I can remember walking up at 8:15, 10 after 8, buying a general admission ticket with my uncle, going upstairs and having no problem finding a place to sit. After Tom, and of course, I didn't know this at the time, but now that I look back on it, when Tom came in here and took the book and things changed, if you didn't get there by 7:30 on Friday nights, general admission was sold out.
Isn't that something? Who was
yes,
doing
sir.
The booking before he took it over then?
Garibaldi was doing it, and I don't know if Garibaldi left and somebody came in the interim. I know Garibaldi, when he had, you know, when he brought the Mr. Wrestling thing in here and he did some other stuff, Garibaldi drew some good crowds there, and I can remember sellouts where, you know, I remember as a kid having to stand up because there wasn't no place to sit. But they were rare.
Yeah,
they weren't every week. When Tom took it after about 3 months of programming it, but it was every week it was selling out.
Yeah, he had a mind on him. He did do that.
I know. I'm assuming Little Eagle booked in here at some point. Sometime
he did.
In the mid-60s.
Yeah,
he did. That was. I'll tell you when that was. 63, 64, somewhere in there, Bobby?
Yeah, it would have been. I mean, it was early 60s. There again, one
Best
of those stories I wasn't
he
around.
Was booking, but... He was booking Mobile in 66.
Really?
Yeah.
So he left here and went there.
Yeah, he had been in and out of Mobile. He had been in and out of Mobile since 56, 57, something like that. And that wasn't even the first name he used. That was the first name he used in Mobile, but he worked in Louisiana in 53 or 54 as Chief Big Beaver.
Really?
Yeah. He always did an Indian gimmick, but it just somewhere along the line he changed to Little Eagle, and he came into Mobile the first time in the mid-50s as Little Eagle, and that's what he stayed the rest of the time.
Well,
and
you know,
he was in and out. He
wasn't a big fella either.
No.
He wasn't. I mean, he was very stocky, but he was not a big fella. He wasn't very tall.
You know, I never heard anybody talk much about him. I don't know what kind of fella. I'm trying to think who didn't care for him too much.
Him and Blassie hated each other.
I was going to say Fred Blassie, because Fred Blassie's the one that when they had
the
Cadillacs, it looked alike.
They bought
right.
Cadillacs
That's
the same week, and neither one knew the other, and they bought one. And they were going to Hoganville on Saturday night, and Blassie got on TV and said, "Don't y'all be messing with my new burgundy Cadillac," and blah, 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 blah. And then Blassie caught a ride with somebody, and Little Eagle drove down there, and they said they cut the tires off that thing.
That's a dangerous place.
Oh,
but he pushed himself. I know that.
Yeah.
Did his wife ever work in here? Venus.
I don't remember her ever working here.
She was from Pensacola.
His name was Richard something, wasn't it?
Charles
Bryant. Yeah.
What?
Richard Charles.
Charles
Bryant.
Yeah. Bryant.
Richard Bryant.
Richard Bryant. That was
Richard
yeah,
Charles.
That's right.
Maybe Richard
Rich,
Charles.
Richard.
Bryant.
Richard. You're right. Richard Bryant.
I knew it was Richard something. I couldn't.
But,
I never met the man. I never met him, so I don't know.
He came in here and worked a time or two for Ann during that 72
run. Did he
run.
Really?
Yeah, he was here a couple times. I know this before I started refereeing. I wasn't in the ring with him, but he was here. Three shots. They kept promoting he was coming in, but he didn't stay.
Oh, Lord,
was he still in the business then?
I don't know if he came in here with the. I don't know if he was working anywhere or if that was the intention to come in here and maybe make one last hurrah or what, but.
After he left Mobile in 66, he never came back.
66.
I know he worked down in Florida and sometime around 63, 64, something like that. He was down in Tampa. But that coming in here and for Ann in the early 70s had to have been his last hurrah, because he and Vinny, they divorced somewhere along the line, and he ended up out in Dallas. And he had a ranch out there, and he hired some homeless guy to do odd jobs on his ranch, and the guy ended up murdering him.
Oh, come on.
No, that's the absolute truth. That was in...
I did not know that.
That was in 80... Hold on, I'll tell you exactly when it was.
I had no idea. You know that, brother?
I didn't know that either.
Good grief. Yeah, I never met the man, so I never ran across him. Of course, he's ahead of me, but...
Yeah.
No, it's even later than that. It was July 7th, 1990.
Somebody murdered him on his own place.
Yep. He was living in Irving, Texas.
Well, that's news to me. I didn't know that.
His son lived in Pensacola. He came to our reunion a few times.
Of course, I know he still lives there. I haven't talked to him in a while. I think I talked to him right after Venus died.
Does that still exist?
What's that?
The Mobile reunion.
Well,
don't life support, but it's
yeah, it's supposedly still there. It's I don't know. It's kind of it's very up in the air right now. What's going on? But supposedly, we didn't have it last year because what I have been told is that a lot of the board of directors resigned at the last minute, and they wasn't sure about the status of the building. And it didn't come off. But this year, supposedly, it's going to come off the first or second weekend in March. And not sure who, how many will be there or whatever. They have formed another group that's going to hold a reunion in Dothan on the third weekend of May. And it's going to be Friday night and a Saturday. And they're going to put it in conjunction with a show that Dennis Gale runs, a Continental Reunion show on Saturday nights that draws pretty decently. I've been to it a couple times. And they've got a big weekend planned. But, yeah, Mobile supposedly is going to be there. The problem with Mobile is all the old-timers have passed away, the ones that we used to go see. I was told by a guy down there, I made the comment, I said, the old-timers that I came to see are not there anymore. And he said, well, y'all are the old-timers now. They come to see y'all. Well, not very many. The last one we had on Saturday, we had 143 people, and we've had as many as 350 there on Saturday. So,
out of that 140-something, how many was in the business in our era?
Oh, see, that's the thing. Me and Charlie Smith and Gene Bennett, Mac McMurray, Susan Green, Joyce Grable, Donna Christiantello came, not Donna, she passed away. Tony Rose came to the last
Tony
one.
Rose.
First time I'd seen Tony in years. Tommy Siegler came. There was a handful. It wasn't many. Not many at all.
I can't even imagine. I mean, is Frankie still alive, Frankie King?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Yep.
Still lives there. He lives in Florida. Scott Teal goes down, spends a week with him every year in early February, 1st of March. I say a week. He spends 3 or 4 days with him.
I always like Frankie.
I do, too. There's another mind that's got so many stories and so many things inside that head. that when he's yep. gone, man, that's a great part of our business gone.
Yeah, he was something else. Funny. He was.
I love to hear him tell stories about the Inferno era. I mean, they were hot there for a few years.
I don't think they weren't. they were.
I had a chance to get to know Jimmy Dykes a little bit there. What a great guy. And that's
was
another one I hated when I was a kid. Oh yes. Lord, he was funny. I mean, I know you've heard me tell the story. The funniest thing that ever happened, some woman threw a fruitcake on Columbus TV and hit him in the nose with it. And that, he told me, he said, somebody threw a brick and hit me. And I pulled that fruitcake out of my trunks. I said, did it look like this? And some of the dressing room fell apart.
That was him.
Oh.
How old's Frankie now?
And he's got to be in the late 80s, I would think.
Got to be in his 80s, yeah. Huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dickie's 85.
You ever hear Frankie tell the story about the built-up shoe? And how him and Rocky used to fuss over who was going to wear it. Because they said it just messed you walking up for a week after you took it off.
I can see that.
Yeah, me too.
That had to have been the most uncomfortable thing.
Oh.
Well, when Curtis started doing it in Mobile is when he was the Blue Yankee. And, of course, he later teamed with Rocky as the second iteration of the Infernos. And then he had a slew of partners himself. He and Doug Gilbert were the Infernos. But what he did was the built-up shoe was on, what, the left foot?
Or
was it the right foot? Whichever
right
one
foot.
Didn't have the built-up shoe, he took and took a flip-flop and cut the thongs off of it, slid it in the other shoe. That way he was lifted up and he was more even. You know, he was even. He said that
makes sense.
That kept him from having a bad back.
That would mess your back, the hips up, really.
Oh, yeah. I tell you something else Frankie did, too, that nobody else I've ever seen could. You know, he developed some way that he could throw that fire. He could throw it across the ring. And I've never seen anybody else do that. Most of the time it just blazes up out of the hand. But he developed a way to throw it, and he won't tell anybody how he did it.
Well, he could do it.
Yes, he could.
He lit me up in Fort Worth one night.
That's scary, isn't it?
Yeah,
see,
but,
that's
fire
coming at you.
No, you know, everybody talks about their era and their generation and the guy. But I think our generation had so much talent. I mean, that sounds cocky, I guess, but it did.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, and all territories were doing good, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, and it was a good blend, too. And I'm saying this about you guys, too, era, because you guys were a decade ahead of me. But you had a good blend of guys like Frankie, who'd been around since the 50s. You know, guys like yourselves that came along, you know, in the 70s. And, you know, but those guys were still in good enough shape and were still believable enough, you know. And then you even had the Frank Hickeys of the world who were still hanging on, you know.
But you're talking about guys like Frankie, even as early as he started. When I got in the business, they was in their best years.
Yep. Yeah, because those guys didn't really hit their strides until they were 40-something.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. It was just unbelievable.
And we had those guys to learn from. They taught us.
That's where you learn.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
how you learn.
Keep your mouth shut and listen. know.
That was it was, of course, everybody thinks their era was, but I just, if you look at all the territories that was running, everybody was doing business.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is an oldie philosophy, but I think it proves what you're saying. We were running the same towns week after week after week, in front of the same people week after week after week, and we drew money. I say we. I was a referee. I didn't draw a dime, but
you were part of it.
We were making money. People were coming to see what we had. And now they talk about all the money they draw and all the money they make. They'll run one town in wherever, and then they're gone for 6 months or a year. You've talked about Augusta, Georgia. You look at the money that was made in Augusta, Georgia on a weekly basis.
On a Monday night.
On a Monday night. Barnett set up an account, a bank account in Augusta, so that Charlie Harbin did not have to bring the money all the way back to Atlanta. He would deposit the money in a night depository. Policemen would go with him. He would deposit the money in the night depository. And then the next day, Barnett had the checkbook. He kept that at his apartment. He would bring me a blank check on Monday morning when we were doing payroll, and then he would sign it. And then on Tuesday, he would call me with the dollar figure, and I would write it in the check and deposit it. Every week, a bad week, I was depositing $4,000. Good week, I would deposit $7,000. So there was a lot of money being made in that one town. Columbus, Georgia, every Wednesday night. Population-wise, other than the Army base, Columbus really wasn't that big. They kind of look at the whole Muskogee County area, but, look at the money that was made on Wednesday nights in that building.
But did you know people came from LaGrange?
Oh,
New
yeah.
Paula,
everywhere.
Everywhere.
That was the power of that TV.
And my thinking is that couldn't be done again until the end of time, so nobody would know how to do it.
No.
Well, you couldn't do it anymore because of what buildings cost.
Right.
And what you'd have to charge for admission, it's just a different time. You couldn't do it. I don't think you could do it.
I had to go up and do a memorial service in Fort Mitchell several weeks ago, and I went down. I actually went down Victor Drive, but when I got down there, it just looking down that little driveway and seeing that big fancy building there, I can't see them making as much money with that big fancy building as they did with that old one.
They don't.
I don't think they do either.
And what they did there in Columbus and what they're doing here in Savannah, I wanted to go down to the city council and tell them they want to build like a 10,000 seat building. Well, 10,000 seats, that sounds like a lot from where the auditorium would hold five.
Yeah.
That's on the floor and everywhere.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get any big groups to come to a 10,000-seat civic center. They're not going to do it. They're just not going to do it.
No.
It costs them just as much to go to Columbus as it does to Phillips Arena or wherever they run up in Atlanta now.
Right.
They're not going to do that. They're not going to draw that kind of money. If you don't have a 15, 16, 17,000-seat building, you're kidding yourself. But then again, I don't remember the guy's name, Bobby, that ran the bell in Augusta. When they built that new place in Augusta, what do they call it?
Richmond County Civic Center. It's the James Brown Coliseum now.
He said it sits dark. He said it sucks the money out of the city.
Yeah.
It just sits. And you still got to keep it up.
Yes, sir.
It don't float. It don't float. And I don't know how much that building in Columbus does, what they have down there. But see, back in our day, a little fella could go rent that building. It was $400 or 10%. So you figure. Now, Somebody wanted me to run the Civic Center there in Columbus when they built that new one. I said, I'll tell you what. You go down there and get a sheet on it to see what it costs to run it.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot how many cops you had to have, minimum of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Had to have so many cops, you had to have an ambulance down there. You had to. It was $10,000 to open the door in Columbus.
Yes, sir.
$10,000.
The Omni in Atlanta.
$10,000 and hadn't sold a ticket.
Yep. The Omni in Atlanta was you had to pay all the ushers. You had to pay the security, and the
lighting guys.
In addition to security, we had our own security guys. Lieutenant Wright had about 10 guys that we paid. They were the guys that sat around the ring and got us to and from the ring, and so that was in addition. You had to pay the ticket sellers. You had a box office fee because Ticketmaster printed your tickets and they sold them online or however they sold them there for a while, you know, up until the show. I forget what all the cleanup. I mean, it was, you were looking at about, same thing, $10,000 to $12,000 to open the door, and the rent on the Omni was like 18%.
It was expensive.
No, it was high.
What did Ticketmaster get per ticket?
They charged a service charge that we didn't get any of. They got all of that. But they charged us like, you know, it wasn't a lot of money. It was like 12 cents a ticket, something like that, for every one they sold. Plus there was a box office fee because somebody had to program it. Somebody had to print them out. Because we had hard tickets at the, you know, if you go see, say you go see Queen or Elvis Presley or whoever it was, all of their tickets were computer generated. They didn't have to print them. In our case, we continued to run our box office at the Sports Arena. We had our regular ticket holders that we had to have, you know, we had to be able to get their tickets for them. So they had to print ours. So that, you know, that was a little expense that we had too. But I mean, I can remember, especially around Thanksgiving, when we would draw those big houses for those tag team tournaments. I would call on Thanksgiving morning and say, "Hey, I'm about out of general admission. I need another 2,000 tickets." And they'd tell me to be there in an hour, and I'd go over and they'd have them printed out for me, and I'd bring them back to the arena.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was kind of on demand, but it was Thanksgiving was always our biggest show. That was the first time we ever drew $100,000 was on a Thanksgiving show. I think we did $103,000.
Back in the day.
But you would have thought it was a ticker tape parade at that office on Friday morning when we realized, you know, when Barnett and everybody realized we'd broke $100,000. Of course, out of that $100,000, you know, they took, God, I don't know, $23,000 maybe, something like that. And I'm guessing, I used to have some box office reports. I don't know what happened to them, but, they took a pretty good chunk.
Yeah, I can't imagine what these big buildings cost today. I can't even fathom.
Well, a lot of these major buildings around the country, the reason they're able to survive is the city has a hockey team or a basketball team. Now, a basketball team plays, I think they play 82 games, so they play 41 at home. So you got 41 dates that are filled. You know, then you used to have ice shows, you had circuses, you know, those things are kind of gone by the wayside. I think Disney still has an ice show that comes in, you know, maybe once a year. And then you have the concerts. But unless you've got those things, you know, when your building's sitting there dark and ain't nobody's in it, you still have to pay the light bill and the gas bill and the air conditioning bill. And it.
Do they cut these basketball teams and hockey teams and any slack?
I'm sure they do. They just about have to. I'm not sure what it would be, but I'm sure they have to for that many dates.
That's big business. I just
I don't know.
But if you got something hot, they'll come see it, you know.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, I know. Again, Ole, maybe this was in his book, or maybe just in conversations we've had. You know, you'd run to Omni, maybe you didn't have something that was real hot that they didn't want to see, and you run it on a Sunday, especially after the auditorium closed here, and they were trying to run the Omni once every 3 weeks, or, you know, maybe you have an off night and you only draw $35,000. Well, you know, a sellout at the City Auditorium in Atlanta was $26,000. That's what the gross was, or a little under 26. But
what was the rent?
We had a deal with the city. We paid $500 a week, flat rate. The agreement was we furnished our own ushers, which is how I kind of got started. That's the first job I had at the auditorium. We got paid $10 for being an usher. So if we had 15 ushers or 20 ushers, that's $200. And we paid our own security, which was the little Lieutenant Wright. He furnished the officers. And the deal we had with them was we paid them, I think we gave them $35 a piece, plus we paid their Social Security. So they cost us around $55 a piece. But you worked that auditorium. You didn't ever have no problem getting in and out of the ring.
No.
So, I mean, they were, you know, if you remember, when them guys sat in them corners at ringside, they didn't sit facing the ring and watch the match. They sat with their backs to the ring and watched the crowd. So, but, yeah, that was the deal at the auditorium. And, of course, the auditorium had a concessionaire that contracted with them. They ran the concession, and all we sold at the auditorium was programs. But
$500 rent.
$500 rent, and we had it every Friday night of the year, except when Holiday on Ice came in February, which. Hell, I was a hustler, man. I got a job working for Paul Andre, who was the comedy skater and the thing selling cotton candy. But I worked for them for a couple of weeks. And then you had the Shrine Circus came in April, and they were there for 8 or 10 days. And then high school graduations were there May and the early part of June. And we had it every other week. And that was holidays, whatever, well, you know.
Right.
There was no reason we wasn't in there other than those days.
That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And those ticket prices.
Yep. And, you know, they used to run the sports arena when they couldn't get the auditorium back in the day.
I remember that building.
It only held about 2,500 people. And, you know, they would run it because that was before the Omni was built. There was no other building in town to run in. I always found it amazing that a city of this size only had that city auditorium. And, of course, Georgia Tech had a building, but you couldn't have got in there on a bet. And other than that was pretty much it.
That's hard to believe, isn't it? When is that new building they run other than Phillips Arena?
Up in Gwinnett?
Yeah. What's it called?
Yeah. It's Infinity Arena or something at Gwinnett.
Is it a big building?
It'll seat about 10,000. It's a size building
is
you're talking about.
Is that where New York runs?
Do what?
Is that where
New York
runs?
Has ran up there. They've ran there, and they've ran Phillips Arena. Most time they run Phillips.
Oh, they do?
But they have run that Gwinnett Arena, yes.
But how many does that Phillips Arena seat versus the Omni?
About the same thing. The biggest
about
16,000. The biggest difference in Phillips and the Omni, of course, the shape's a little different, But the biggest difference is there are a lot more private boxes at Phillips Arena than there were at the Omni.
Oh, okay.
That was the main reason they gave for building the new arena, was more private boxes to generate more revenue.
And they're both in the same location?
Same location. They imploded the Omni, and they rebuilt this one right on the spot. I've been in it one time, and I won some tickets on the radio to a concert, and this was before Debbie got real sick, so this is probably 15 years ago or 10 years. Well, I tell you when it was. It was in 2006, and the reason I remember is the tickets I won was to see Paul McCartney, and it was the 40th anniversary of when the Beatles played at Atlanta Stadium, and that morning they ran a special on the front page of the paper, and they showed a replica of the ticket from 1966 when the Beatles played the stadium. Ticket prices were $6.
$6 in 66.
But, you know, 66 has a lot of money for a ticket.
Right.
Anything. Because when the Falcons came here in 66, our season tickets for the year wasn't but $48. It was $6 a game. But the night I saw Paul McCartney, me and Debbie went. It cost us, both of us round trip on the MARTA train, cost us $5 or $10, whatever it was. The face value of the tickets that I won on the ticket, it said they were $296 a piece.
I guess it was packed.
Oh, yeah. They were hanging from the rafters. Programs, $45 a piece. T-shirts, $75 a piece.
Oh, come on, Bobby.
Yes, sir. It's crazy. I told Debbie, I said, you want anything? She said, I want a pretzel and a Coke. That was $9. That's all she got. So, it was, you know, I mean, I enjoyed it. I'm glad I never saw any of the Beatles in person. I enjoyed it. But, you know, that's the only time I've been. I can't afford to go. They've outpriced themselves.
Do they have anything where the Falcons play now in that new stadium? What do they have in there?
Well, the soccer team plays there, and it sells out every game.
It does not.
Yes, sir.
Yes, it does.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Really?
United, son, they draw about 65 or 70,000 fans every time they open the door. And used to they had the Georgia State High School Playoffs in the Georgia Dome, and in the first year this new one was open, they played there. Well, they moved them now. They're playing their games over at what used to be Turner Field. That's Georgia State's football stadium now, so they play over there. What else do they have? They have had some, Garth Brooks has played there. George Strait was there a while back. He played a show there. So, the big artists that do the stadium tours, they play there. And, you know, but it's – I've never been in there. I'll never darken the doors of that place.
That's unbelievable.
So.
The way the Braves
Well, gentlemen,
right,
I'm
going
to have to buy out.
$6.
How much is the hockey? How much is the soccer tickets?
I don't know. I've never been. I don't really know, but they're not cheap. Nothing's cheap anymore.
No.
The cheapest Falcon ticket now is like $45 or $50, and that's at the top of the place. Plus, you have to pay the service fee for the Ticketmaster, so you know you might as well say $60. To go to a football game. So, it wouldn't surprise, I don't know, Michael, have you ever been to a hockey, to one of them soccer games?
No, I wouldn't go for
free. No, my daughter's been, but I haven't.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. My godson.
Well, I love to watch them. I watched them last night. They won 5-0 last night.
My godson.
And five
is,
goals
is
a lot to, score in one game.
Yeah. My godson is on a scholarship at Reinhardt College with soccer player. And once
really?
A year, I forced myself to drive up to Reinhardt, which is north of Canton, up north of Atlanta here. I forced myself to go up there and pay $5 to watch a college soccer game. It's like watching paint dry.
I know.
They run down the field.
One goal.
But, you know, I go for him. He's good. He was he's not Division I, he's Division II. But 1 week last year, he was the offensive player of the week for the whole country. So he's good at what he does. So I try to go, you know, support him as best I can.
Right.
I'm just not a soccer fan.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to have to bow out. I got to early get up in the morning.
All right, brother.
All right, Jerry.
Have a great day. I know it's a tough life.
Yeah, it is.
Be together.
Yes, it is. I'm sorry all my woes that I couldn't do it more often. But
hey, Bubba, you're fine. You're fine.
Well, y'all just let me know when we get ready to do it again.
I will do it, sir. You stay safe down there.
I will do
so. I will do that.
All right, man.
Y'all take care.
See you, bud.
All right, Jerry.
Hey, good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Night. Well, we didn't get around to what we wanted to talk about.
I was excited.
We'll
ever touch our topic?
Next show. No, we'll do that. We'll do that next time because I'm gonna have to get off here too. My leg is killing me. I held off. Normally I've had 2 Tylenol PMs by this time at night.
Yeah.
I held off because I was afraid I'd drop off to sleep. But
you got the Braves on TV there in the background.
Yeah, unfortunately,
that's why you need some Tylenol. Which Strasburg hit the home run. I needed a Tylenol.
I figure it this way, though. If we lose every game in this thing, we'll still be 2.5 games ahead of them. So,
well,
we put that much distance. I'm hoping we'll add a couple more games to our lead, but who knows? And then I'm anxious to see what's going to happen by the end of this month if we pull the trigger and go get a real starting pitcher or a real closer.
Hopefully both,
but who knows?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate you guys joining us, and I don't know. I'll have to look at our schedule and see when we'll plan on the next one. It probably won't be the first week of August, but it'll be, you know, depending on what's going on with everybody's schedule, we'll go from there. So, but we will get together sometime next month and do this one more time.
Sound like a winner.
All right. Well, good night, everybody.
Good night.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.